Thank you to B'nai Ashurin Beis Medrash Summer Program. It's a pleasure to welcome Eli Weber back. Today's shiur is sponsored by Debbie Sondheim in memory of her father, Chaim Sondheim, whose first shiur tzeit will be Matzah Yom Kippur, and in honor of her mother. Also in memory of Zeichen Nishmas, Menachem Yitzchok and Yaakov Yisrael, Rachel Leah, Bas Chaim Asher HaKohen, and Chaim Abba ben Yosef Abraham.
Okay, just a reminder of the ground rules from Monday night. The idea behind this series is not Hespedim, it's to focus on the thought of Rav Lichtenstein. And I picked three specific areas to focus on. Second ground rule, when I say Rav Lichtenstein or Rav Aaron, I mean Rav Aaron Zatzal or Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal. I can't say it all the time. It doesn't come out right. Third, again, it's not objective. I am a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein through and through. And so to the extent you're looking for objectivity, I might not be the best person to do it. Nevertheless, I'll do my best. Fourth, I will try to say things that Rav Lichtenstein said or that I'm sure he believed and try hard not to editorialize or if I do, I'll try to let you know that it's my idea and not his. Okay. Tonight's topic is centrist orthodoxy. It's a term he used. I don't know that it's a term that he loved, but I suppose for tonight's talk, when I say centrist, you could think of modern Orthodox, you could think of religious Zionism. I think they all fall into the same camp. And likewise, when I say the right, you have to fill in Haredi, Hasidish, Yeshivish, whatever the, you know, imagine it. Centrist is what I described, and the right is whatever you want to make of it. Okay. The outline for tonight's talk is basically lifted directly from a talk Rav Lichtenstein gave in 1985 to the Religious Educators Conference in America. It's written up in a book called By His Light, which is really excellent, mostly because Rav Aaron didn't write it. His writing is hard to read sometimes. Like, the best book the Rav ever wrote was Al HaTshuva, because he didn't write it. Somebody else wrote it, and it was accessible to the rest of us. The best book Rav Lichtenstein ever wrote was By His Light, because he didn't write it, but all his ideas are in there. Okay? Enough for the introductions. Even back in 1985, Rav Lichtenstein talked about what's referred to as the shift to the right, how there seems to be a movement from wherever the center used to be. We seem to be being pulled in a direction towards, again, the more yeshivish, the more black hat, the more right wing. And if it was true in 1985, 30 years later, it's even more true. And so we need to look at ourselves, and I suppose when I say ourselves, I think we think of ourselves as being centrist or whatever those terms are, and we need to look at ourselves vis-a-vis this shift to the right and try to see where we are. We also need from time to time to look at ourselves and ask ourselves whether we're doing it right. Rav Lichtenstein used to quote Rav Yisrael Salanter, who said that he would abandon the... Rav Yisrael Salanter made up the Musar movement. And he said he would abandon the Musar movement on any day that he woke up and didn't feel like the Musar movement was important enough to be founded on that day. And Rav Aaron said that he knew this Rosh Yeshiva, who was a religious Zionist, Rosh Yeshiva, of a Hesder Yeshiva, who told him, I believe the same thing about Hesder, that if I didn't wake up every day believing that Hesder Yeshivot should be founded today, I would close my yeshiva. And Rav Aaron, being incredibly honest, said, I don't know that I'm there. Meaning, I don't think I could hold myself to that standard. But he did think that a cheshbon ha-nefesh and looking at ourselves was a very useful thing to do. He thought doing it every day put too much stress on us. But doing it from time to time. He said, for example, Aser Smei Tshuva is the time where we don't just re-examine little bits of our lives. We re-examine our entire lives. He said, from time to time, you need to step back and ask yourself individually and as a community, are we doing things properly? Are we leading the right lives? And so he did that in this talk, and we will attempt to do it tonight. To do a cheshbon ha-nefesh, to ask ourselves whether we're leading life the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to, is to ask two questions. The first is the path we've chosen to follow the right path? Number two, assuming the path we've chosen is the right path, are we in fact doing what we set out to do? Okay, those are the two issues and the two questions that we have to ask ourselves. And that's what we're going to try to do now. I'm happy to be interrupted with questions. I suppose the best place to start is to ask, in what ways are we similar to what we refer to as the right wing of Orthodoxy? And in what ways are we different from them? And if we could figure that out, then we can move forward and try to analyze what we're doing right and what we're not doing right. Broadly speaking, it needs to be obvious to everybody in this room that we share the same dreams and the same goals as what we refer to as the right wing. For example, everybody wants l'saken olam b'malchus shakai. Everybody wants to make the world a better place. Everybody wants to be part of a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, a holy people, people who serve as role models to the rest of the world. That's on a national level. On a personal level, if you look at number one on the sheet, the Gemara in Shabbos says as follows, Amar Rava, b'shah shemachnisin adam ledin, after a person dies, he goes up to Shemaim, Omrim lo, they ask him the following questions. Nasasa v'nasata be'emuna, did you deal honestly in business? Kavata itim l'Torah, did you establish regular times of learning Torah? Asakta b'piria v'rivya, did you have children? Sipisa l'Yeshua, did you look forward to the ultimate geula? Pilpalta b'chachma, that's a harder one. Did you deal in intelligent ideas, let's say? Hevanta davar mitoch davar. Okay, did you try to understand one thing from another? Did you think logically? Did you think creatively? Vafilu hachi. I yirat Hashem hi otzaro in, I lo lo. And with all these things, if you had yiras shamayim, then you're in good shape. And if you didn't have Yiras Shamayim, you're not in good shape. It needs to be obvious that all these goals are shared by all Orthodox Jews. Maybe more broadly than that, but certainly it's shared by our community and it's shared by those to the right. And if it's the case that we share all these goals, how is it that if we share all these goals, we seem to be different in so many ways? And the answer probably is that we interpret the goals differently. Okay? Nevertheless, it has to be clear to everybody here that we share much more with the right wing than what differentiates us from them. Lichtenstein used to quote this academic who taught in Hebrew U, who years ago in Yerushalayim used to say, the problem I have is that the people I can daven with, I don't like to talk to. And the people I like to talk to, I can't daven with. And there's a certain truth to that. We know in our own lives that, you know, there's a guy at work who you love. He's just a Mechal Shabbos, but he's the nicest guy in the world. And there's a guy you sit next to in shul who you never talk to because you don't like. But, okay, you can't daven with the Mechal Shabbos and you can daven with the guy from shul. We feel that way. We know it to be true. And the question we need to sort out is why and how does it play out? Okay. If we look at the ideas we just laid forth, to be a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, that phrase can mean different things to different people, right? L'taken olam b'malchut shakai, to fix the world in God's image, we can share the goal and just see it differently. And so too with all of the goals. So saying that we share all goals with the right wing doesn't mean we go about it the same way, because the same goal could be seen differently by different people. What are the major ways in which we were distinguished from the right wing? Rav Lichtenstein thought there were two major ones. He thought in the States, general culture distinguished us from the right wing, and in Israel, relationship to the state distinguished us from the right wing. I would add that in the years since then, there's another step, although this is something I only figured out in Israel, and maybe I should put this caveat in now also. Charedim in America and Charedim in Israel are not the same. Not at all. In America, you can be Charedi and go to work every day. In Israel, you can't. I just saw on the news yesterday, there's a Charedi town called Elad. You're not going to believe me, but this is true. In Elad, there are now 100 eighth grade girls that are going into ninth grade, and they have not been, it's not like a Sephardi thing or an Ashkenazi thing, it's across the board, they have not been admitted to either of the two girls' high schools in Elad, because the two girls' high schools in Elad have decided that if your parents work for a living, you are disqualified from going to their school.
Not parents,
fathers. Oh, okay, sorry. Is that good or bad? Okay, fine. So, I think 30 years ago, that couldn't possibly have been true. But we're moving towards a place where, again, in America, Charedim work. In Israel, if you show up and you work, you're not part of that community. And the saddest thing is these people who come to Israel and have, you know, they're regular card-carrying members of the Charedi community in America, and in Israel, they're nowhere. Yes?
I've heard the same thing about
Lakewood. Okay.
You can't get into certain schools.
Certain schools. For sure there are certain schools, but this is, okay, it's starting to happen here, but there's no question that in America you can still be Charedi and work, and in Israel you cannot. Okay, so let's start. Let's do general culture first, which is, Rav Aaron said, you know, the distinguishing characteristic between centrism and the right wing in the United States. When Rav Aaron says general culture, he means what Matthew Arnold called, and what he used to quote all the time, the best that has been thought and said in the world. It doesn't mean that there aren't great things said in Torah, but he thought that there were great things said and thought by people outside of Chazal and outside of Torah, and that to access those ideas, that's what he means by general culture. Okay? He doesn't mean getting a degree. He means expanding your mind and opening your heart. Now, there's no question that done correctly, general culture adds in many, many ways. It instills, according to Rav Aaron, a sense of morality that you don't always get elsewhere. It instills psychological and metaphysical complexity of human life. It teaches you things and allows you to see things that you wouldn't otherwise know and you wouldn't otherwise see. Said a different way, Rav Lichtenstein thought that centrism is more a way of thinking and less a way of life. Right? To be centrist means you think a certain way, you think with a certain nuance, with a certain complexity. It doesn't mean you're a doctor or a lawyer. It means that this is how you approach the world. He loved to tell the story. He had a friend who had a nephew who went to Harvard Business School. So the uncle said to the guy, when he graduated Harvard Business School, he said, "What did you learn?" And he said, "I learned that the only way to make money is by using somebody else's money." And then the uncle said to him, "It was all worth it." And Rav Aaron said, if you ask me, and he said this many times, what I learned when I went to Harvard, and again, he went to Harvard to get a doctorate in English, he said, "I learned that the world is complex." And he said, "The world is complex, v'idach zil gmar." Everything else is commentary on that exact idea, that the world is complex. And we have to be clear, when Rav Lichtenstein said complex, he didn't mean complicated. He didn't mean, I can't figure it out. We sometimes think that complex, that's how you pronounce it? Complex or complex?
Complex.
Complex, okay, sorry. Complex and complicated are synonyms. They're not. Just because there's more than one way to look at something doesn't mean you can't figure it out. And doesn't mean that you can see the various sides clearly. You can. You just have to spend the time analyzing it. One of the ways that our complexity is seen is by looking at people and analyzing them psychologically, not just in two dimensions, but in three. Rilke used to say this all the time. He said, you want to know the difference between the centrist community and the right-wing community, go to a levaya. He said, you go to a Haredi levaya, and I've been to a bunch. He said, all the hespedim are identical. You just plug in a different name. If you were a gadol, it means you were a gadol b'torah, you were a gadol in chesed. We can't live with, you know. He said, he remembered, he said, Rav Aaron Cutler was like this, at the time, like the biggest levaya there was. And he said that Rav Aaron Cutler was a great man, but he was great in a way that was different than Rav Moshe and than other people. He said, but every hesped was exactly the same, except for the hesped given by Irving Bunim, who was a layman, who actually talked about who Rav Aaron Cutler is, or who he was. And the truth is, if you ever read a hesped that the Rav gave, if you ever heard of Lichtenstein, I heard him many times give hespedim, they're able to talk about the essence of a person. They're able to talk about what distinguishes people. They're able to see different ways of being great. It doesn't mean, you know, because it's not exactly the same hesped, it doesn't mean it's better or worse. It has to fit the person. And he really felt that in the right-wing world, they just don't think this way. They're incapable of seeing people differently. If you're great, you have to fit this one mold. And if you don't fit that one mold, you know, if I don't say the same thing for you as I would say for any one of the other gedolim, then God forbid I'm insulting you. And that's something, and in fact, the truth is also at Rav Aaron's levaya, and since the many hespedim I've heard, people try to find what's unique about him and what's different about him. And people have done a good job. I mean, his six children spoke at the levaya, and they did not say the same thing. Okay, two of them quoted the fact that he made pudding, apparently. My daughter thought that was great. I was going to start making pudding also, I just don't know how to. But they saw him differently. Okay, that's one. But more than that, without psychological complexity, he really felt like it's almost impossible to learn Tanakh. Right? All you have are good guys and bad guys. You can't have a good guy who did a bad thing, or a good guy who's something less than perfect, because that's too complicated. And you can't have a bad, you know, Esav has to be a Rasha. It can't be that Esav also, you know, was a good son to Yitzchak. Because we don't see people that way. We don't have the complexity to be able to say he was great but, or he was bad but. And he said, because of that, people are not sensitive to Medrashim, they're not sensitive to nuances in Tanakh, and stuff that comes out is simply not accurate and not a correct reading of the stories in Tanakh. There's also the fact that people are only able to see leadership in one mold. I heard this story many times. Rav Aaron said he was asked to be part of a leadership group that helped make Haredi leaders. These were people who were going to be, who were Talmidei Chachamim, who were going to be trained to then go to the States for a few years. So he said it was supposed to be like some seminar, and he proposed the topic of the seminar be leadership. So he said the best guy said, it's a waste of time. So Rav Aaron said, it's a waste of time? Like, you don't think it's important to look at different modes and models of leadership? So the guy said, no. So he said, what is it? How is a person a leader? So he said, a leader is the Chazon Ish. To be a leader is to be exactly like the Chazon Ish. So he said, Rav Aaron said to this guy, you think Moshe Rabbeinu behaved like the Chazon Ish? The guy said, yeah, of course. So he said, what about this? Many psukim? So he said, those are early in his life, but after Matan Torah, after Yisro, yeah, he was the Chazon Ish. So Rav Aaron said, fine. The Rambam? He said, yeah, of course. So he said, we have letters. He said, the Chazon Ish would be a doctor to the harem of the, you know. The guy said, yeah, Chazon Ish. So Rav Aaron said he couldn't convince the person that there was more than one way to go about being a leader. And that's a failing. it's easier to do it that way, but he thought that was a failing. Okay. So if that's a failing, what's good about the way we do it? Well, what's good is that being a centrist allows us to be scared of both sides, but to learn from both sides, right? We can calibrate better, and we can balance things better. We're able to deal with concepts like Dvar HaRishus. Dvar HaRishus is, it's not an obligation, it's permissible, it's, not, it's optional is maybe a better word. We can deal with the halacha concept like it's optional. It's harder for the right-wing community to deal with that concept because just tell me if I have to do it or if I don't have to do it. Don't tell me that it's a possibility and depending on, that's not something that works well. We understand that not everything is in the Shulchan Aruch. That's good for us because the truth is not everything is in the Shulchan Aruch. We also understand the balancing of values. We understand how to balance a community against an individual. We know how to balance chumras against tradition. And this is actually an interesting idea. The idea that it matters what my parents do, it matters what my grandparents do, it matters what my great-grandparents did, that there's a tradition that matters, it's bizarre, but I think that that's something that speaks much more to our community than to other communities. There's a famous, if you want to look on the sheet, there's a famous Kesef Mishnah, not because people know it. It's an important Kesef Mishnah. It has to do with the Rambam. The Rambam paskins that fruits and vegetables of Goyim in Eretz Yisrael that were grown by Goyim and that had the process taken past a certain point to the process of to the time of Meruach, they're potter from Trumos u'Maisros. Okay? That's not why this Kesef Mishnah is famous. Look what happens. Who wrote the Kesef Mishnah? The Kesef Mishnah grew up to be the Beis Yosef, then he grew up to be the Mechaber. Okay? Look at this. It's a good one to know. Okay. So says the Kesef Mishnah number 2. V'haminog ha-poshut b'chol eretz Yisrael k'divei Rabbeinu. He says, the minog is like the Rambam to be mekil and to not be mafresh chumus u'maisros from stuff that's grown from goyim. By the way, the Rambam is a minority position on this in Rishonim. But the Mechaber says, this is the minhag, that's how everybody holds. U'miyameinu lo shamanu potse pelach lo kalzeh. And in our days, we never heard anybody get up and say we should be machmir on this stuff. The Rambam sheet is the one that won out. That's the halacha. Va'ata, he says, now, kam chacham echad. I wish I knew who it was. He says, a chacham got up, v'nirelo, Shehu mitchased ba'asoto hefech haminhag ha-pashut. He's mitchased, he's a chassid by being machmir. U'ma'aser peirot shegalu b'karka ha'akum v'nigmra malachtam b'yarakum v'gam mircham akum. And he's machmir against the sheet of the Rambam. Not only that, v'holech u'mifate acherim sheyekablu aleihem la'asot kidvarav. He's on a crusade to get people to be machmir like him. V'nireh pashut be'inai sheroui liman'am mizeh mishum lo titkodedu. Says the Kesef Mishnah, we got to stop this guy. First of all, it's an issue of lo titkodedu. The minhag is to be mekil. Now you're going to start making different groups and people won't be able to eat at other people's houses. Because some people will be machmir and some people won't. Vod. Shemeachar shebechol elu hamedinot kiblu alihem la'asot kidivei rabbeinu milumad mash enogea bichvod harishonim shana agukein. He says also it's disrespectful to the Rambam. Skip a little next line. Levatel haminhag umihu zev ve'ezahu. It's mean stuff. Everybody knows where that comes from. Hashem la'ol libo la'asot kein. Right? That's a pasuk about Haman. Va'od shedavar zehu davar she'ein rov atzibur yicholim la'amod bo. It's hard. You can't make people be machmir this way. Apparently, it would cost a lot of money. They were relying on these fruits. Lachen yesh ligzor aleihem shelo yinhagu kein v'im yirsavu yachufu otam. What does the Kesef Mishnah say? He says people who try to paskin lechumra, and again, the majority position is lechumra, we got to stop them. Why? A, it's disrespectful to the Rambam. B, and that's not the greatest argument. B, there's a communal minhag that should be respected. And C, it's going to put a burden on the community. It's going to cost them more money. Another chumrah, another hashkacha, they're going to have to shop only in this place and not in the other place. The Kesef Mishnah had a sense for how halacha works and how communities work. He's telling people, you're not allowed to be machmir like other shitos. That's unheard of nowadays. Somebody wakes up and says, I know this is a Rambam, but the Rif, the Rush, the Balaturim, they all paskin l'chumrah. Shouldn't we paskin l'chumrah? Says the Kesef Mishnah, no. We have a tradition not to be machmir here. We have to stop it. Rav Amital, one second. Rav Amital, when you think about it, here's an interesting thing. Why don't men wear tefillin at mincha? There's no good reason. I remember a guy started wearing tefillin at mincha and yeshiva. Rav Amital Zatzal said, doesn't he ever wonder why his rebbeim don't? Why his parents, father didn't, his grandfather, you just go ahead and do it? The sense that you belong to a tradition, and the sense that the tradition matters, and there must be a reason, and that if you start raising the bar too high, you're going to leave people behind, that stuff matters, and we have to be sensitive to it. Yes? No, Lotus Gordlu is a society thing, but... So, for example, I assume, if you ask me, somebody gets up in Shul the Shabbos and says, you're not allowed to carry in T-neck. I understand there are people who are Makil, but Frum Jews don't hold by an Eruv. That's Lotus Gordlu. Everybody in T-neck holds by the Eruv. Everybody in T-neck carries. Yes, there are Shitos that say you shouldn't, or you know, it's best not to, but to get up and wage a campaign against the accepted position is an issur d'oraisa of lotus gordlu, yeah.
No, but for us, let's say, in Eretz Yisrael, or here, let's say for 50 years, the majority started to hold a certain shita.
No, but stuff that happens over time, and you can't see it happening, so it can't be lotus gordlu. Right? It's when you do it, this guy was waging a campaign against the accepted halachic position. That's usur. Okay. So again, in terms of culture teaches us to think a certain way. It allows us to see things in complexity, in nuance. It allows us to see differences amongst people, to analyze them psychologically. It allows us to think in a certain way. And Rav Lichtenstein was clear that there's a huge benefit to that, to what culture brings to Torah, to the ability to see things in a way that perhaps we wouldn't see if we only had, if we only read Tanakh at first. It's hard to know exactly. That's one of the major differences. Second, religious Zionism or just Zionism. I have to say, if we're honest, it's less of an issue now than it was 30 years ago. Like, our community may be losing on culture, but I think we're winning on Zionism in the following sense. Haredim live in Israel. They participate in the government. There's only like the fringe lunatics, who don't vote and will give you $100 if you give them your passport on the day of the election so you don't vote. For the most part, I remember after the kidnapping last summer, so the Satmar Rebbe gave us some horrific talk in which he said how, it's the parents' fault because they let them go to the West Bank where it's dangerous. So after I got finished being offended, I thought to myself, his grandfather would be rolling over in his grave because even the Satmar Rebbe's given up on the state of Israel. Right? It's just the West Bank is dangerous. But, the state exists. It's not going anyplace and it's not subject to a huge fight anymore. But it is interesting in terms of philosophically how people look at it and how this came about. And if we use Zionism as a prism to look at differences between communities, I think we'll see something interesting. Rav Aaron thought there were four minor and one major difference in the way we look at Zionism and how the communities became different on this point. The first is, how much are we, human beings, supposed to participate in the historical process? This is an interesting point. In our world, things happen because we make them happen. In the Haredi world, things happen because HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes them happen. Now, it's an exaggeration. It's an exaggeration on one side, it's an exaggeration on the other side also. But it's only a slight exaggeration. The Haredi view pretty much is, you know, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ready, big things will happen. And our view is, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ready, we'll have the power to make big things happen. And it won't happen if he doesn't want it to happen, but who's going to make it happen if not us? That's a significant difference between communities, a significant difference about how they look at the world. I think the Haredi people who I know think that anything that happened via man's initiative is suspect. The problem is, pretty much everything happens via man's initiative. It's only in this retelling of history that man has nothing to do with what happened in history. It was all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in real history, it has to do with human beings. That's the first. The second is, how do you look at partial success? That's a big difference in our communities. How do you evaluate a partial success? Let's say, for argument's sake, and I don't think it's really debatable, the state of Israel is a partial success. So to us, again, make it up. On a scale of, I'll say it this way, I remember a friend of mine went into Rav Lichtenstein's office to ask him questions about Zionism and the state of Israel, and he asked him what he thought the state of Israel meant in relation to the ultimate Geula. And Rav Aaron said, he loved sports metaphors. He said, is it a touchdown? No. I think it's a first down on the 40. So the guy came out, 5 minutes later he came out, and he told me this, so I know it's a true story. And I said to him, who's 40? He said, I forgot to ask. So okay, it's not a big difference. But it's a partial success. Nobody thinks that the state of Israel is the Geula. At most, it's a step along the way. In our community, that's worth celebrating. And again, I think on the Haredi side, you succeed or you don't succeed. Wake me up when Mashiach comes. Till then, I'm out. That's another big difference. The third, obviously, is just how you look at Zionism, narrowly speaking, the specific reality of political Zionism, how much you look at it. And again, I think this has to do with the worldview of how involved do we get in politics. Right? So in Israel, where basically governments rise and fall based on Haredim, they still pretend that they don't get involved in politics, right? Litzman is the Skan Sar for Briut, right? There is no minister of health. There's just the assistant minister of health, because in the Haredi world, they don't become ministers. It's just words. They're as involved in politics as anything, but they don't admit that they're involved in politics. We are not embarrassed to be involved in politics. We think it matters. I think Haredim are embarrassed to be involved in politics. And then, of course, a big issue is, how willing are we to work with secularists or chilonim? So the answer is, in our community, we are willing. And in the Haredi community, there's still a sense that if you have to work with chilonim, you have to work with secularists, somehow whatever you're doing is tainted. Maybe that's an exaggeration, maybe not. But maybe the biggest issue is how interested we are in political order generally, and how important Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Israel is specifically. Right? Our community believes that sovereignty over the land of Israel is significant, is worth fighting for, and is of great value. That's not surprising in a community that in America would say the Rav is the ideological leader, and in Israel would say Rav Kook is the ideological leader. Now, what's significant? Because it's a funny thing. In the Haredi world, you know, halacha rules, and you would think that in our world, less so. You would think. But in fact, our definition of halacha is much more expansive. Right? We think that Zionism fits into, you know, kind of a halachic conception, that the state of Israel matters halachically in a way that I think Haredim don't. They believe that halacha is limited to what's referred to as the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha. Shulchan Aruch and Etzios Yadayim and Asher Yatzar. And those things really matter. But they don't expand halacha and the halachic vision to cover politics and to cover things like sovereignty in the land of Israel in a way that we do. And I think we're comfortable talking in those terms. Zionists in Israel are comfortable talking about the state in religious and in halachic terms in a way that Haredim wouldn't. Now, to be honest, Rav Lichtenstein pointed out many, many times that he doesn't love all the Rav Kook stuff about the state of Israel and how the state being the ultimate expression of religious life. He thinks that some of this went too far, or, you know, he doesn't agree with how far it went. But the bottom line is, he sees the state in religious terms, he sees the state in halachic terms, you know, how far you want to go, but that's something that I think in the Haredi world they don't. In terms of partial success, Rav Lichtenstein loved to use the following example. The mitzvah of Dalet Kosos at Leil HaSeder, that's a mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. There are four Kosos that together make up this one idea. And the Dalet Kosot are Keneged what? The Dalet Lashonot of Gula, right? Votseisi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Vilakachti. But the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim talks about each of them in certain contexts as individual mitzvahs. And Rav Aaron thought that this was a metaphor for the way we're supposed to look at the world. It's not that if you don't have Votseisi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, if you don't have Vilakachti, then none of it matters. Yes, there's a mitzvah of Dalet Kosos, and in a perfect world, we get all four of them. But in a world, he said, in our world, let's say we only were zocha to vote Seisi and Vitzalti. Fine, so we'll do those. The halacha recognizes and respects partial success. And if that's all we were zocha to so far, okay, so that's all we were zocha to so far. But it's still worth celebrating and it's still of great value. Okay. Now, everything we've talked about till now, culture and Zionism, may stem from the fundamental distinction in the two worlds, and for lack of a better term, we'll say it's the difference between Torah only and Torah and. Okay, I think that's a pretty clear way of saying it. The question is, in Chazal, who's right? We'll spend a few minutes looking at sources. Is Torah only the way we're supposed to live, or is Torah and the way we're supposed to live? So, look back on the sheet for a second. Look at number 3. The Gemara says, Ella, kol ha'omer ein li ella Torah, ein lo ella Torah. Okay, that's a truism. Hanami pshita, that's not it. Says the Gemara, Ella, da'afilu Torah ein lo. If all he has is Torah, a person says ein li ella Torah, means he doesn't even have Torah. It's not that he only has Torah, it's that he doesn't even have Torah. My taima, Amar of Papa, Amar Kra, Vilimadetem, Va'asitem, Kol Sheyeshno Ba'asiya, Yeshno Bilamida, a person who does also learns, Kol She'eno Ba'asiya, Eino Bilamida, a person who doesn't do, doesn't learn. Now, again, you could say that this Gemara means, asiyah means, you know, taking a lulav, sitting in a sukkah, eating matzah. All I could say is, Rav Lichtenstein didn't think that that's what the Gemara meant. He thought the Gemara meant doing based on things that you learned, and doing based on principles that you had learned, and doing meaning something more than just doing the mitzvah. That a person who just had learning was missing something. Now, he didn't claim that this was the universal position in Chazal. And he pointed out, anybody could think of these sources. Now, He pointed out, look at the next one, the Mishnah in Avos. The Mishnah says, Ben Bag Bag Omer, Hafochba, Vafochba, the Kulaba. Right? The Mishnah seems to say, if you look in Torah, everything is in Torah. You don't need to look anyplace else. Rav Lichtenstein didn't claim that every source in Chazal supported the broader view, but he thought there were enough sources in Chazal to make it a legitimate position within Chazal. And he loved the particular Rabbeinu Bechaye. If you look in the next source, in number 5, the Pasuk says, we'll read it in a few weeks, Re'ei nasati lefanecha yom es ha-chayim ve-es ha-tov ve-es ha-moves ve-es ha-ra. Again, it's a strange Pasuk. The Pasuk says, I give you life and goodness and death and evil. So you would think that those, it's the same thing. Life and goodness are the same, and death and evil are the same. Says Rabbeinu Bechaye, right below that, Ha-chayim va-tov va-moves va-hara al ha-Torah atzma. They both describe Torah. Chayim and moves, tov and ra, they all are adjectives for Torah. How does it work? Ki'inyan sha'amar. Gam ani nasati lahem apostol in Cheskel, chukim lo tovim umishpatim lo yichyu bahem. I've given you Torah that you will not live by. How does that work? Ki ha Torah la tzadik hi ha chayim vahatov v'la rasha hu hamaves v'hara. The Gemara seems to say that Torah can be used for good and Torah can be used for bad. And that the fact that you learn Torah and the fact that you're focused on Torah doesn't necessarily guarantee you a result. Rav Lichtenstein implied that there was something outside of it that could help make your Torah better. We'll do one more. Number 6. Am Rav Yeshua ben Levi. My dichsiv. This is last week's parsha. V'zos ha-tarasha sam Moshe. Zacha, if you were zocha, if you merited, na'asas lo sam chayim, then Torah is an elixir of life. Lo zacha, na'asas lo sam misa. If not, it becomes a poison. It's the same Torah, depending on how you relate to it. Now, Rav Lichtenstein believed, obviously, that Torah was the most important thing. This isn't a question about the importance of Torah. It's a question of whether there's Torah and or only Torah. And he had a certain metaphor that he liked to use. He said, the idea that if something is the most important thing, it's the only thing you do, he said, nobody lives that way. And the metaphor he used to use was, he said, you have bread and you have butter. So bread is the main part. No question about it. So why don't you tell people, instead of putting butter on your bread, just take another piece of bread. Because nobody leads their life that way. Because the addition of something else, and again, the addition has to be something worthwhile, but the addition of something else is part of, you know, the butter makes your bread better. And this was the key thing. Rav Aaron thought that whatever you're going to add, if you believe in Torah and, the and has to make your Torah better. It's not Torah and skiing, because skiing is not going to make your Torah better. But the stuff you're adding, by the way, this is not to say skiing is good or bad. I actually have a theory on this, but it's not to say that, it is to say that the stuff that you're adding, philosophically, when you say, no, Bishita, I believe in Torah and, the and has to be something that makes the Torah better and more worthwhile. It's not just the freedom to do anything else and to claim afterwards, well, I'm modern Orthodox, I'm Torah and. It's a question of Torah and what? And he thought that the halachic concept of grera, in which you take something and you make it more important by attaching it to something with halachic value, it has to be like the example of bread and butter. The butter makes the bread better. So the stuff that you're adding to Torah has to make the Torah better. If it doesn't make the Torah better, then there's no excuse for it. And maybe this is a good time to point out the following, before we even get to the cheshbon and nefesh part. This, yeah.
There's work coming into that equation. Work, right? Obviously, you have a family, you have to support.
Right.
Work is going to be.
So work is a curse that we were cursed with in Gan Eden, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Bizeh asapecha tochal lechem." You're going to have to work for a living. So you're asking me, do I think work is bittul Torah? No. Do I think Rav Lichtenstein's work is bittul Torah? No.
It's not part of that Torah, you know.
Well, it depends. In a perfect world, right? In a perfect world, you would want to have a job that contributes to the world. Not all of us are zocha to that. Once I wasn't. But, you know, but you wouldn't say, let's put it this way. Having to support your family doesn't allow you to steal, right? And doesn't allow you to cheat on your taxes. It doesn't allow you to do a bunch of things. To the extent that you could lead a life in which your job actually adds to your Torah, that'd be fantastic. But it's not always doable. But it does raise this issue. There's the Torah and then there's the other stuff. And I think we make a mistake. One second. I think our community makes a mistake by pretending that going on vacation, watching the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is not a kiyum in modern orthodoxy, in centrist orthodoxy, in anything like that. It's just fun if you like watching football. But the idea that, no, I have to watch the Super Bowl because otherwise I won't. No. I don't think that the Rav ever watched a Super Bowl. I don't think the Rav ever watched a Super Bowl. I don't think it's usher. I don't think it's a mitzvah. It's just fun. And there's probably a place for fun, but you have to figure out, you know, what place fun has. I think we make a mistake by pretending that everything we do that's not Talmud Torah is somehow, because I'm modern Orthodox, I'm going to make it Talmud Torah. It's not. It's just, it's just going on vacation. So you have to figure out what makes sense for you. But to pretend that that's some kind of mitzvah, I think we make a mistake. It hurts our community. Excellent. Okay. One more Gemara. Last source. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Kishenitfesu Rabbalaza ben Parta Rabchananya ben Tradion. Right? During the Roman oppression, so they prohibited learning Torah and a bunch of other things. Amalo Rabbalaza ben Parta Rabchananya ben Tradion. Ashrecha Shenitfasta al Davar Echad. You're so lucky that you were caught for one thing. Oyli shenitfasti al chamisha dvarim. But it's too bad me. I did five things wrong, and somehow I'm in a worse place. Amlo Rav Chanina, ashrecha shenitfasta al chamisha dvarim va'ata nitzol. No, better you who are going to be saved. Oyli shenitfasti al davar echad ve'eni nitzol. She'ata asakta b'torah u'b'gmilus chasadim va'ani lo asakti ela b'torah. Kiddi Rav Huna Dom Rav Huna Kala Osek Bator Bilvad Domek Kimi She'eino Eloka. A person who only learns Torah is as if he didn't have a God. Okay, that'd be a pretty horrible thing to say, except it's a Gemara. So again, the listening thought that there was huge support in Chazal. I suspect he thought it was the dominant position in Chazal, not the exclusive position, but the dominant position of Torah and. And again, I want to be clear, the and has to be like the butter on the bread. It has to be something that adds to the Torah. Now, here's the bad part. The beginning, I said we have to look at two things. One is we have to identify the path we've chosen. And I think so far we've talked about all the really good things about our community, about centrist orthodoxy. We've talked about culture and what it can add. We've talked about Zionism. Now we have to ask the second question, and that is, are we actually following the path that we claim to be following? Is it the case that the lives that we lead individually and as a community, and, okay, I lived in Teaneck for long enough, we could take Teaneck as an example, we have to ask ourselves, are we doing it the way we claim to be doing it? Ideally, the way Rav Lichtenstein saw it, and I think the way we should see it, is centrism issues from the dialectic tension between our love for Torah and our love for Derech Eretz. And there are so many things we want to do, right? We want to learn Torah, We want to fix the world. We want to make the world a better place. We want to raise children. We want to give tzedakah. We want to build shuls and schools. We want to do all these things. And it's not enough time in the day. And there's this tension. And we want to read philosophy because it makes us smart. And we want to look at art because it opens up our eyes to all kinds of different deeper ideas and music. We want to do all these great things. That's where centrism is supposed to come from. But is it really true? Is that how we lead our lives? Or is it, as Rav Aaron called it, tepid indifference? It's not that we love all these things. It's that we like them. And so we don't really do anything with great passion. He said, if you look at our schools, and he said this to educators, he said, you look at our schools, you look at our camps, how much are we willing to sacrifice for Torah? Right? How much is it this tension? And how much is it, okay, they learned an hour of Torah today, that's enough. They learned 2 hours today, that's enough. When kids go to camp, Rav Aaron used to joke, he said, are they not learning Torah because they're reading philosophy? Because they're listening to Beethoven? He said he didn't think so. He thought that we were doing a poor job of instilling passion in our children and in ourselves. And he said, and it's a weird thing coming from him, he said, for people who are not going to become Talmidei Chachamim, love for Torah is much more important than knowledge of Torah. The most important thing you could do in your community, in your family, for yourself, is to develop a love for Torah, not to try to become the Gadol Hador, to just enjoy learning Torah. He quoted the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It's really a great quote, and it's the only time I ever heard him quote the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe said, the problem with the conservatives, it's a good line, is not that they compromise, it's that they make a principle out of compromise. It's okay to compromise once in a while, but if your whole life is a gigantic compromise, and there's nothing that you do all the way, and everything is a compromise, then there can't be any passion. There can't be what he called kana'ut. Like a real, real desire. Like, I can't budge on this thing. This thing matters to me so much. We have to feel that way. So he said, look, critics are going to say it's inherent in the system that you've adopted. Right? If you try to do all these different things, so you're going to lose passion. If you believe in Torah im derech eretz, it involves diffusion, and that entails a measure of dilution, right? If all you have is Torah, so you know how to focus everything on Torah, but if you're doing all these different things, so then everything gets diffused and it gets diluted. Rav Aaron said, to the extent we believe that Chazal believed in Torah im derech eretz, then we don't have to worry about that. Because we're doing what we think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. And maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live in a world that's diffused, and a world in which we have different goals, and we're pulled in different directions. So if that's the case, then we're putter from that problem. But he said, that's not the case. This is a famous story. He told a story many years ago, shortly after he had made Aliyah. He was walking in the Beis Yisrael section of Yerushalayim. The Beis Yisrael section of Yerushalayim, where Rav Yisrael Metzl used to live, there's a lot of little alleys. And he said he was walking with his children, and a car got stuck. So some merchant had his car full of stuff to be delivered, and it got stuck. And he said there were a bunch of Haredi kids, and he guessed they were no more than 10 or 11 years old. And he said that as they walked up there, the Haredi kids were looking at and having the following conversation. The guy's not wearing a yarmulke. Now again, when your car is stuck and it's loaded down with merchandise, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa of what's called prika uti'ina. You have to help a person. It's like your donkey is loaded up, right? So that's what this would be. It's a clear case of prika uti'ina. And he said these kids were talking about a gemara in Kuf Yud Gimel in Psachim that said, well, if he doesn't wear a yarmulke, maybe he's mechal shas, and that mafresh trumus u'maestres, we don't have to help. So Rav Aaron said he wrote a letter to the Rav telling him the story, that he had watched this happen. And he said, he thought to himself, in our community, how many 11-year-olds would know the Gemara in Pesachim? He said, he thought very few. He said, on the other hand, in our community, our kids would help the guy. And he said, if he had the choice between knowing the Gemara and helping, he would pick helping. But he said, but he felt terrible because he doesn't think it has to be a choice. Right? Why can't we raise children who both know the Gemara and want to help? But he said, we live in a world in which that seems to have been a choice. And it's a choice that he thinks we shouldn't have to make. Okay, conclusion. We have no interest in fighting the right. We have interest in doing what's right. Our task is to build our own world and our own communities with courage and conviction in what we think is right. Last week's parsha had a pasuk. Said, "Lo tsaguru mipnei ish ki amishpat elokim hu." That a judge, it's an issur d'oraisa for a judge to worry about what somebody's going to say. Not allowed to do that. So he said, okay, narrowly, in the pasuk, it's an issur d'oraisa for judges. But he said, more broadly, he thinks it applies to communal life and to how we raise our children and to how we run our schools. And he said, he thought a teacher who saw the right way to raise children and knew the curriculum that should be used to raise children to Yirat Shamayim, Tavodas Hashem. But the teacher builds a different curriculum because they're afraid. It doesn't look frum enough. It looks too frum. He said, he thinks it's an Issur D'oraisa. I don't think he meant it narrowly, halachically, but he thought to live looking over your shoulder is not the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to live. To ask ourselves, you know, how the right wing is going to look at us is a self-destructive way of doing things. We have to ask ourselves if what we're doing is right. And if we think what we're doing is right, then we have to do it. And if not, we're over an isser of do not fear any man, because we're worried about what other communities are going to say. And what's true about the community is true about us as parents and how we raise our children. We have to do what's right. We have to instill passion in our children. We have to instill a love for our Kaddish Baruch and a love for Torah and a love for our fellow Jew in the most extreme way, in the way that the most Haredi person would do it. There's no reason why we can't. People often ask, and I'll end here, people often ask, is centrism lechatchila or bidiyeved? Is the way that we live lechatchila or bidiyeved? And Rav Aaron said the answer is, it depends. If you do it, if you are backed into it out of compromise, because you like Torah but you don't love Torah, and you want to have a big house, and you want to go on vacation, all these things, so this is where you landed up, he said, then it's bidiyeved. But if you look at the world and you say, I love Torah and I love these other things and these other things actually make me better at Torah and they make me a better Oved Hashem, they make me a better Yirei Shamayim and they make me a better father and they make me a better everything that matters, then it's lechatchila. If you really feel that tension, then it's lechatchila, and then we could be zochet to the pasuk in Tehillim that says, Yelchu mechayel al chayel, we will go from strength to strength. Yerael elokim b'tzion, we will either, when he quoted the pasuk, I don't know if he meant, we'll actually be in Tzion, which isn't such a bad idea, or we'll see God there. I guess our time is up. Thanks very much. See you Monday night.